This podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man.
Boy!
Hey, let's talk about you. The ID10T community events at ID10T.com, like Russ Stevens, a.k.a. Cool Movies Darth, who has started a podcast called 90 for Chill, which Russ says is dedicated to movies with a runtime between 74 and 99 minutes, the time frame that I feel is ideal. Russ, I could not agree with you more. That is a fantastic idea. Russ goes on to say, there are times you need a cinematic fix but don't have time for the latest Scorsese masterpiece or offering from a comic book universe. There's also times when you know you need a conclusion to prevent a binge costing you a whole night. My guests and I try to follow these guidelines as we chat up features that are definitely worth your time and are beyond easy to make time for. 90 for Chill, the podcast, can be found on all major podcast platforms at 94chill.com, and that's spelling out 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, 4-F-O-R, chill. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing, Russ. Really great idea for a podcast. Events at ID10T.com for everyone else.
Previously on 90 for Chill, the podcast.
Everything in Tammy's life is just great. But when you're young and in love, life can get very complicated, especially when it involves an insanely jealous creep.
That's my lady, all right?
Late night phone calls.
I want you to come over.
Yes!
Sneaking around in your own house.
Did you lock the door?
Don't worry.
Your boyfriend getting dumped in a wild animal park. And a crazy doctor.
Well, that's it.
Who turns out to be a mad scientist.
I mean, if you're going to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs, right?
With an insane invention that only needs a brain. But this Tyrannosaurus Rex just wants to be a party animal. Even when you tell the truth, nobody believes it anymore.
It was a dinosaur.
What?
It's more than a machine with a brain. I mean, it is a machine with feelings. We are on the brink of something special. We are going to be immortalized.
Is that really you in there? Oh, Michael, what have they done to you?
You poor thing, you gone crazy.
I am not going crazy. This is just a little hard to explain.
That's a dinosaur!
We found the dinosaur, Sheriff. It's in a truck being driven by your by your son.
Byron?
Yes, sir. See a couple of folks back in the hospital. They say he stole it.
Stole what?
The dinosaur.
Oh, Jesus.
That is my dinosaur that you are threatening. I made him and he is mine.
What are we going to do?
I will give you... immortality!
Not if Tammy has anything to say about it. Tammy and the T-Rex.
Maybe fill up 15, 20 minutes for this week's episode of 90 for Chill, the podcast. This is Russ Stevens, and I'm just chilling with my older sister, Rory, who has recently discovered Joseph and... Well, it's got Ben Affleck, it's straight to DVD.
Joseph, King of Dreams.
Ah, and she says it was quite excellent. I mean, I remember Prince of Egypt, and I mean, it's... I don't know, I kind of like the book better, dare I say. I don't know, you can't really bitch about anything which features Martin Short and Steve Martin. Was Steve Martin in Santa Claus 3?
No, that was Martin Short.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's just him.
Okay, so I don't regret missing out on that one. But thinking about Santa Claus 3, were you familiar with David Krumholtz making his wrestling debut a couple weeks ago?
No.
Yeah, he's, I don't know, his structure never looked like he'd get the beer belly. But it could have been just great special effects. Him coming out as Drew McIntyre in a kilt and such. You know, it's got to appreciate the diversity of Scotland if you can have Jewish representation in any form.
I suppose.
So, any other... So we also just had a discussion about robot jocks.
Yes.
RoboCop 2 for the kids.
Yeah, that is a good way of putting it. Yeah. I like the film. Talking about other B-movies, because this is the weekend that B-Fest usually takes place up in Chicagoland, and I know some of my online friends are unhappy that they had to miss out this year for obvious reasons. Think about the kind of movies that they've had at B-Fest, because they've had some interesting lineups over the years. They have an official website for the festival, and you can look up most of their previous years.
So just Google B-Fest?
That's the fastest way to do it.
Yes, domains do not matter. I am still a bitter 2002 web designer.
It's www.b-fest.com.
Yes, I am bitter. Bitter web designer, bitter underemployed professional wrestler, bitter child model, as we explored last week. I am coffee. And it can never be too dark. But, I'm probably throwing my Castle Freak... No, I threw my Castle Freak review in last week to the podcast with Jigsaw Joe.
Right.
So, the only thing new for me was Antisocial, which Allie's going through the alphabet at Disc Replay in Champaign, finding whatever trashy movie she can find for me.
Well, you can do that. Can't you just do that on Tubi?
Well, you see, Allie, in her current living situation, she is not really... I kind of handled all the tech when we were living together, so she is still pretty quick to just getting DVDs and putting it in. She's not using my passwords or passcodes, so... And, it's awkward saying, hey, can I slip into your new place while your boyfriend's not there to... Slip in your Fire Stick. Oh, the innuendo with all the slip in it. So.
Let me see.
So, B-Fest. So, they're doing it. Are they doing it virtually at least or something like that?
No.
No?
It's kind of surprising. You'd think they might try something like that, but a lot of it is just the group experience. If you've never heard of it, it's a 24-hour festival. Where part of the fun is staying up for most of it. There are some break periods going into the next morning. But a lot of it's group experience. That they always do Plan 9 from Outer Space every year around midnight. And they've got like a Rocky Horror style call and response gags. They also do a little short called The Wizard of Speed and Time.
Well, that's actually the entire B-Fest for me, and sounds like something where you would want to become your own Wizard of Speed and Time.
You can find the short online because it's very short. It's like 3 minutes long.
Well, I'm thinking probably more just going to the south side of town to find me the speed, and I'll figure out the time later.
No. But you look at, like, one of the more recent ones was the 2018 show, for instance, had those. But they also had... stuff like the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man and Surf Ninjas, Troll 2, The Villain
with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad showed me that one once. Makes me think I've got to go through all those old VHS tapes sometimes, see if we can still find that copy. I imagine, though, it's probably on the DVD transfer of some kind by this point.
I think Dad has it.
The DVD of it?
Yeah.
Huh. Because I knew he had
really
a dub...
high profile movie.
Well, I knew he had a dub VHS.
Yeah. They also did, like, Tremors and Buckaroo Banzai was the closer in 2018. They also like to work... They do a lot of older movies, too. Reading about it, there is this tension between, the older movies. Because they've been doing this at the university since 1981.
University is in UIC, Chicago?
Just a moment, because I do want to get this detail right. It's Northwestern University.
Oh, and Evanston.
Yeah.
Well, then, how can you get be your own master of speed and time. There's a good hour or 2 hour drive between them when you think traffic. bring your own Coke. Okay.
Not far from Super Donk, though, from what I understand.
No. I'm just saying it's all about traffic when it comes to Chicago.
But they've been doing this since the 1980s, and like it wasn't until the early 90s they even started doing 80s movies. And then at the turn of the millennium, for a while, there were questions that were doing too many 80s movies. Apparently because they were the ones that... Because I like to read up on the reports people write down of what their experiences were like. They were easier to get the rights to on 35mm. And eventually they started working from DVDs and things evened out again. But there are some movies that show up every few years, like Gymkhana shows up every now and again.
Oh no, there's a pommel horse. Oh, just brought me back to Family Guy. Cartoon Network currently showing the golden age of the series, season 4, once they got through the... Oh, we're actually going to stay on television for a long time phase? But when you talk about the 80s like that, I think that's just how filmmaking kind of went, which makes the 80s the ultimate camp decade.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
I mean, you had exploitation in the 70s. Like, things are made for certain people.
Right.
And, thank you, Allie. live radio, folks. But in the 80s, it's like, we gotta amuse everybody for maximum dollar.
Right, they've had a lot of camp movies at BeatFest. Sometimes more than one in a given 24-hour show. Like, they've done Breaking 2, they've done The Apple, and they've done some of the Chuck Norris movies. And...
Well, it's surprisingly enough, Chuck did a lot of Chicago-based movies.
Huh.
Well, no, I mean, I think... The Horror and the Hero and the Terror. I just remember that being a movie poster at my Taekwondo studio back in the late 80s. I don't know what my instructor, Robert Lawrence, of Lawrence's Black Belt Academy's con was. Most people are just, I mean, don't want to call him a con man, alleged. Most of that comes, though, just from the fact he suddenly disappeared. And everybody picked up on it, tried to expand it to Eastern world. Story of Morton Martial Arts, and why I am officially the baddest man in the town because of that. You know, it's Morton. Enough conservative values from the people who I was afraid to fight makes me want to fight them. So, I'm going to take that title.
You look at some years, like 2008... from my understanding, was a really good year. They had Tentacles as the opening movie. And Shelley Winters' hat inspires this running gag where, on the old Saturday Night Live Celebrity Jeopardy bit, it's a big hat, so somebody joked, it's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat. And then there was like an attempt at a jump scare in the movie with this goofy guy popping up twice before the kill takes place. And then for the rest of the festival, the running gag is whenever a movie tried to get spooky, and then the guy from Tentacles jumps out.
So it sounds worse than Killer Fish.
Yeah, it's got a bigger name cast as far as your Italian ripoffs go.
What, Killer Fish or Tentacles?
Tentacles.
I didn't know it was an Italian ripoff. Now you're just selling this movie to everybody.
It's got Shelley Winters, Henry Fonda, John Huston. Like, they all come in for a day or two.
Oh, nuts.
I think Bo Svenson ultimately plays the guy who helps get rid of the threat with some orcas. Anyway, and they followed that with Dracula's Daughter, which is one of the more obscure Universal horrors, though it's a very good one.
Huh.
It's a direct sequel to their Dracula with Lugosi. But it takes an interesting angle. Then they did Barbarella, one of the more famous movies.
Duran.
Yep. Then they did the Midnight, Plan 9 from Outer Space, followed by... And there's... BeatFest kind of has... It slots certain kinds of movies at certain times of night. Usually after Plan 9's black exploitation movie. In this case, it was Black Samson. Then... When you're in the wee hours of the morning, you do stuff like Zardoz.
I just never had the nerve to actually watch that one. I mean, it's not the Mankini that's turning me off of it. It's really just, I love Highlander 2, and I just can't bring myself to, like, you're sullying the legacy of Sean Connery.
Then it was Bird Eye Gordon's The Magic Sword. Then it was The Blue Bird, which is the 1976 fantasy that was a U.S.-Russian collaboration with Liz Taylor and Jane Fonda, and which has no legit video release in this country still and hasn't been on cable since, like, Fox Movie Channel did it a few times about 10 years ago. It is an amazingly failure of a movie, and apparently it was a big hit with the crowd for just how lame and weird and creepy it was. Because it looks very cheap for a movie that cost $12 million in 1976 money.
Sheesh.
But that's partially, they went to Russia to shoot the movie,
okay,
and the crews were not up to doing this kind of a production.
Yeah.
Like, we brought in the celebrities. They, like, had the extras.
So Comrade Quimby and KGB officer Wiggum kind of probably took the money?
Could be, I don't know.
It just sounds like...
I think there were terrible issues with trying to translate between the two groups. And Cicely Tyson, you know, just passed away. She had a minor role. She has an important supporting role in the movie as... a cat turned into a human. Good. That's one of the weird things about The Bluebird in all versions, because it was a popular play at the turn of the 20th century, and they did a few films. One version had Shirley Temple in the 40s, is that the little kids go on their quest to find the Bluebird of Happiness, and they're accompanied by the spirits of the items and things around them, because they're poor kids and they need to learn to appreciate what they have. And it's like their dog and their cat, they become anthropomorphic human personifications. So does bread, milk, water, fire.
Okay, so we got...
sugar.
So we got Calcifer and the entire cast of Mauro Hosono's Mirai, which is on Netflix right now. And as
That's
I say,
good
I just... you know, it had a lot of, the film has a lot of potential. I stopped probably 40 minutes in. It's just, you know, a 2-year-old threatening to swat a baby with a bullet train. Like, you know, you just realize, yep, I would be smacking children.
Well, in this movie, at some points, the dog and the cat, they lick the kids on the cheek.
Oh, I'm sure that was in Mirai, too.
And that looked weird.
Yeah.
But poor Tyson, because being in Russia, not a lot of black people there, so there was no one who could do her hair.
Yeah, just I
had to shave her head afterwards.
Yeah, just
it was that bad for her. She couldn't get good lighting, couldn't get someone to stand in who had the same skin tone, so she couldn't get the right lighting.
Well, just, only Ivan Drago's boxing trainer. I think he was Cuban anyhow. I think the KGB brought him in to specifically make Drago the killing machine that he was.
Right. And the rest of the show had stuff. And the rest of the B-Fest from there, they had another, the B-level Universal Monster movies, The Mummy's Hand. And they did Xanadu that year. And last of the Creature from the Black Lagoon movies, Creature Walks Among Us. And I think this might have been the year they ended up doing Lone Wolf McQuaid. When they couldn't get Empire of the Ants.
Well, Lone Wolf McQuaid, one of the few times I think that Chuck Norris actually got a good opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't... Bruce Lee didn't give him a lot of stuff. What was that one? Way of the Dragon? Or
Enter the Dragon?
No, that was...
Game of Death? I can't
remember. No, Game of Death was the unreleased one.
Right.
With Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Right, right.
It was the one where he went to Rome.
I can't remember.
So Fist of Fury was... So you had the Big Boss, and you had Fist of Fury, the Chinese Connection.
Yeah.
And then, The one where Chuck Norris gets his ass kicked by Bruce Lee. But yeah, it's like professional wrestling. Chuck Norris is never gonna do the favor again for anybody.
Right.
If he's in a fight, he is kicking the crap out of you unless you're some genetic monster. I know that one is from. It was on Amazon. With Riff Tracks. It had
Silent Rage
with our favorite fat guy from. The, dare I call it nerd porn? I mean, I don't have an issue with Revenge of the Nerds, the premise, any of it. The word revenge is written in the title. When you see movies like I Spit on My on Your Grave, a lot of bad stuff's gonna happen. But, you know, that's what revenge is, bad stuff.
Anyway, B-Fest usually ends with a kaiju movie of some kind. Usually it's a Godzilla one, though sometimes they mix things up a little. I guess one in 2006 they were going to have the 1998 Godzilla be the closing film. There was a lot of pushback that they did not want that to be the closing movie. Not that Godzilla, so they had to move it earlier in the show.
Right. When we want a Godzilla movie for a B movie. Not that one! It's
like, just the all-time fastest turnaround time between when a movie got to B-Fest and when it was originally released was the 2006 show, when they managed to get Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2 as the second to last film.
I don't know, a lot of this does sound like the Star Wars Holiday Special. No, I just don't want to acknowledge it happened. Why are we bringing this up? Why, like, this is like, you know, somebody entering my apartment and seeing Bradley Braves and Peoria Chiefs with Chief Rainout merchandise. And
yeah.
It's like, no, that's supposed to stay in here. I'm not bringing it back out.
But,
I mean,
yeah, the 2006 show was an interesting one because that was also the year they did Superman 4 as the opening movie. That would be a fun one. That was also the year they did Graffiti Bridge with Prince in the overnights. They did Earth Girls Are Easy.
I'm currently listening to the Rewatchables Ringer podcast on the Ringer Network. They're talking about Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, were things ever going to get better than 1984? Now, if you want irony... The year, maybe it's not irony because 1984 being such a celebration of corporate structure and such, classic 80s, Reagan's second term, but was culture going to get better than that? I think is what everybody started wondering, say, every 5 years, like, man, I really need Ghostbusters, man, I really need the Terminator, man, when is Prince going to come out with a new movie? I mean, 1984 is always going to be is the alpha and omega of chaotic culture, I think.
Looking at some of the other shows.
I mean, 1975, we only had one shark.
Yeah.
That's 77, one spaceship.
Looking at some of the other years they've done.
81, one whip. You know?
Where's point? The 2013 show had stuff like The Wasp Woman, the early one of those Roger Corman monster films. They did Steel that year with Shaquille O'Neal.
Yep, he's, he was good in Blue Chips. What else can we say? We'll give him Blue Chips.
They've done Robot Jocks at least once. Can't remember offhand if they've done it more often, but I know they've done that at least once.
Anything Cronenbergian?
They generally don't do, like, slasher movies or big body horrors. Like, I think Robot Jocks is one of the only Stuart Gordon movies they've done. Like, they've never done the Reanimator movies.
Okay, or From Beyond.
Nope.
I could see Space Truckers making it.
They'll get there down the line. Like, it's not that they won't do more really adult stuff. They've done Life Force. Like, usually in the real early morning slot, there'll be, like, blaxploitation stuff and maybe some stuff that's got a lot of, that's...
Oh, so, are you so... racing. B-Fest is... I mean, like Wu-Tang, it's for the children.
In the early more... In the, like, prime time and maybe mid-morning to the end of the show in the late afternoon, there's a fair deal of stuff that you probably show kids. But in the overnights, they do some hard stuff. They do harder stuff. They did Showgirls a few years back.
Well, I'm just saying, I've put it out there on my social media, primarily at Main Event Zombie, on Twitter, that I really think I need to show my kids. I don't have any kids, so my nephews and my nieces. Django Unchained and The Great Gatsby. I haven't seen The Great Gatsby. Was that Baz Luhrmann who did?
Yes, that was Baz Luhrmann.
Yes, I have not seen Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby. But the memes are so bloody important. Children need to learn about Leonardo DiCaprio and the memes. This is like showing Schindler's List in class. I think we need to show Django Unchained in schools. We are in the perfect conditions right now with this pandemic. I think it would really loosen people up. You know, maybe we go and censor the N-words, but no. Violence and snide looks.
But in terms of what content is, like, they'll do, like, grizzly kung fu movies or stuff like Herschel Gordon Lewis that done some of his stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want body horror, well, it's so goofy. I do own a copy, though, of the Wizard of Gore remake with Crispin Glover. It's interesting. You got Brad Dourif, who we laid a lot of praise on last week, Joe and I. It's not really any good. Crispin Glover over the top. It has promise. Brad Dourif being slimy. Naked Suicide Girls. I mean, it's got all the pieces. This is why you need to go to maineventofthedead.com. You send me emails at rustthebus07@gmail.com so we can get my pro wrestling zombie comedy off the ground. I can get to directing. I sent a vast tweet out trying to get guests for the show, including an old friend of mine, Taylor. And this girl, over two weekends, had me sit through Biodome and Hudson Hawk. There's nothing redeemable about Biodome. But Hudson Hawk, I think somebody could fix that.
It is kind of a broken thing, because I helped review that. Back when the Agony Booth, sometimes wrote for the Agony Booth, where we all did a mega review where generally we would do like 10, each covered 10 minutes of the movie in depth. And I did the ambulance chase sequence up through, I think, midway through the museum heist.
Hey, it starts with Frank Stallone and ends with Danny Aiello. Mm-hmm. I mean, that actually sounds like... There you go. You have your movie right there.
Yeah, it's got a lot of potential, but I understand the sheer smugness that comes off of Bruce Willis.
Well, he kind of did start smelling his own poo at that point.
It is pollution after a certain point for a lot of people. I understand the tone they were going for.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently it did fairly well in Japan.
Oh, no.
I can see why that... Because I was reading online, they saw the joke more quickly. Kind of film it... Because it is a tongue-in-cheek film.
Yeah.
And they're used to that with stuff like Lupin the Third.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
But no, it's... you can see why it flopped.
Right. So...
B-Fest titles. They've done, like, Friday the 13th part. Now, the only Friday the 13th film they've done is, now that you mention it, Jason X, the one that has the David Cronenberg.
All right, we are... We
That's
are getting
the
our...
only one they've done so far.
Yeah, we're successfully getting our themes here. So we're just moments away from getting ourselves on Podbean, I think, was where I found your Mike and Mike guys hosting.
I think so.
And, you know, once you get to the Podbean, we get the, first you get the Podbean, then you get the iTunes, then you get the Blue Chew money. And then you get the women because you got the Blue Chew. I'm doing my best to sell it for free. I want, and, you know, maybe I should just get the free sample, totally commit to this bit.
Right.
So, ladies, Snapchat, I'm at CutFussRuss.
And what other stuff that they've done over the years that you'd know from? A few years ago, they did Roar.
Yes, that was pretty much made classic, at least for this generation, from the 80s All Over podcast. Definitely worth looking up. It's tragic that we can't keep bringing them back.
Well, Alamo Draft House before that, they were the ones who revived it in the first place. Because that movie didn't really get a formal American release, as they talked about on 80s All Over, until Alamo got to it. They did the Garbage Pail Kids movie one year, and tellingly, even though that's intended as a family movie, that was like one of the really early morning slots, because having seen it, I can't believe it went out with a PG.
Well, I mean, Robot Jocks got away with a lot of stuff.
I'd argue Garbage Pail Kids movie was so constantly repulsive.
Well, I guess it's a thing about expecting repulsion. Like, Garbage Pail Kids, oh, it's a kid's trading card thing. It's disgusting.
I know.
We're good with that. Gremlins. No. Gizmo's cute as a button.
Mm-hmm.
The original Baby Yoda.
Just coming after a year after the Fly went out with an R, because it's a hard R. But there were a lot of complaints at the time from professional critics that there were some critics who loved it at the time. Like, Siskel and Ebert were really big boosters, and Siskel especially was famous for not really being a fan of horror films, but he really stuck his neck out for The Fly. But there were other reviews that called the movie, you know, not just disgusting, but close to obscene in how far it went.
Look, I mean, I could see a PETA argument, but I don't really think anything overly obscene in the film.
Right. I mean, have you seen the monkey cat reel that they cut from the film?
No, I did not see the monkey cat reel.
That's what they call it, is the monkey cat
scene. Well, I saw it on Starz, and I still got to get around to actually watching the last season of American Gods, which is the reason I justified spending the $8 there.
Well, it's on the DVD releases as a bonus feature. But in between the scene in which Franca finds out she's pregnant, and then the dream sequence, there's this whole, like, 8 minutes worth of material in between, which
Let me stop you there, because now I'm just thinking, no, monkey cat, bad idea. Cats can rule the world, they just lack the imposable thumbs, and we're doing this.
I mean, yes.
Okay.
Seth is in a worse state. It's a unique design. You see it in some of the promo materials for the film, like the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in this... His stage is noticeably getting worse. It's getting close to what his final humanoid form is. Main difference is he still has a lot of hair.
So we're talking, you know, like, get out of here, because not being wanting to be a lone Brundle before he realizes, well, I'm a freaking fly. So
yeah, it's after pluses. He's figured out that there's advantages in the previous sequence, but at this point, it's getting worse. And in this sequence, like, at this point, he is starting to look a little more deranged.
Okay.
And what he does is, and there's no real dialogue in the sequence either, which is part of why it went over the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
He decides, it's revealed that he's put the test baboon that survived earlier, that we don't find out what happened to that in the film proper, but he puts that in one telepod. And he puts a little cat in telepod number 2 and sends them both to
telepod number 3. Right.
Yeah. And what comes out is basically a half cat, half baboon creature. Like, both of the heads are more or less intact. Okay. And it's not only a twitching mess, it attacks him. He has to fight it off. It scratches his side badly. You know when he is crawling on the ceiling and he points out the little growth on his side to Veronica?
Yeah.
Oh, look, what's that? I don't know. Well, it scratches that, and he flings it into a corner, and then he grabs a lead pipe and beats it to death.
Well, so how did we get Cat Dog then? I mean, it didn't work in this movie. Well, how did it turn into a series?
I sometimes wonder if that's the inspiration for the joke in the Simpsons parody where Santa's a little helper and
Snowball
2 gets
turned
into.
Yeah, you can be Lisa's, right.
In that case, it was two different creatures. But anyway, after that, on top of that, Seth becomes despondent, goes out on the roof of his building, and then he falls down the side of the building, uh-huh. And we find out the growth contained an insect leg that's just coming out.
Ah.
And the reason you don't see it later is because he bites it off.
All right. Well,
This was turned up in at least one of the test screenings in Toronto when they started testing the film, mm-hmm. And it got such a horrible reaction from the audience that at least one audience member threw up.
Stories
vary as to whether it was in the auditorium or not, depending on who tells it. But for the rest of the movie, the audience no longer had sympathy for Seth because they didn't understand at that point why he was treating the animals like that in the first place. In the finished film, you realize later that he was trying to figure out a cure for his condition. But even so, and it does make sense in that it shows that why Seth's mind's starting to go and why he would turn away Veronica the next time he sees her. But as they say, as Stuart Kornfeld says in the documentary about the film, we realize that, I'm paraphrasing, but if your protagonist kills an animal, the audience is no longer going to care about her problems.
Well, you know, killing cat never helps.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm showing my biases towards what animals I would kill.
Yeah.
I didn't say I was a great person at any point.
Right. And also, having seen the footage, because it did all survive, and you can see it as a bonus feature on the DVD, the special effect for the cat, the monkey cat creature, it's not that effective anyway. It's not one of the better effects.
Hmm.
And it doesn't quite come off.
So this is what it's like to die in a Canadian film festival. I don't want to cause you any trouble, and I won't. Goodbye.
That's one of two big sequences they cut. The other were the epilogues.
Yeah, and Steven Cronenberg, you don't need that stuff.
Well, yeah. It became pretty clear that while they did want to tie off what would happen regarding Veronica's pregnancy, they came up with four different versions of the epilogue, all of which involve a dream sequence in which a baby with butterfly wings emerges from a chrysalis in a stop-motion bit. And, like, there were four different versions. I'm sorry if I'm giving spoilers away.
It's not in the definitive 1 hour 36 minutes. I think we're cool.
Okay. In one version, we learn that Veronica didn't keep the child and she's back with Stathis. In another version, she not only didn't keep the child, she's now pregnant with Stathis's child. He tells her when she initially wakes up from a remnant of a nightmare, worst thing that can happen is it's going to look like me. And then the other two versions is one, she's single again and she hasn't kept the baby. And the fourth, and it's the one that Gina Davis seemed to have found the most interesting, is she's alone, but she's going to carry the original child to term. She's changed her mind about that.
Mm.
So the dream sequence that goes with this has different meanings depending on what the surrounding scenes are.
Well,
But again, the effects work, the stop motion for the butterfly is totally out of place and a little too cutesy. But the other problem is that, as Cronenberg quickly realized on the test screening phase, nobody really cared anymore after Seth was killed.
Okay, then now we screwed up and spoiled things. We didn't say Seth died yet. It could have been a mutual. We didn't talk about regurgitating on hands and feet. And I mean, oh, geez. Now I'm thinking, of the kinky stuff that could happen between Ronnie and Status because of the lack of hands. I mean, geez, this is a Pornhub category waiting to happen. Okay.
But remember, the movie did end up getting a sequel not 3 years later. Yes, and pretty much all the promotional material goes through with saying this is about their kids. So
right,
that
well,
plot point was already spoiled.
I'm surprised Eric Stoltz was even... Well, he did have the mask. So
Leonard Maltin's capsule review jokes. Can Eric Stoltz move his neck around anymore after all the makeup he schlepped on here and in masks?
I'm just saying, it's really difficult for me, as somebody who didn't really see The Mask or
mm-hmm.
Eric Stoltz's career beyond
mm-hmm.
Pulp Fiction. I mean, I've been meaning to see Killing Zoe. I know he was in Anaconda. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he was a that guy, a Joey Pants, dare I say. It's just very difficult then when you go back and, like, oh, how, you know, heap so much love upon Back to the Future, and it's like, how did Eric Stoltz have a career when you almost screwed up Back to the Future? I know it's not his fault.
Yeah.
But, it's just very interesting to look back upon him and such. And then, like, oh, my counterpunch to... I'm going to follow up The Mask with a sequel to a movie that nobody's really asking for a sequel to.
Yeah.
Like...
And... I've seen The Fly, too.
I've seen the end. I mean, I know.
Yeah,
but...
you have to give it credit for being even gorier than the first movie was.
Well, I mean, it's not about being gorier. It's about the charm of the gore. The timing of the gore.
Yeah.
Is what really works with The Fly, and I think
right.
works with that. I mean, you get the... In... Scanners, which I have not watched from beginning to end, but
mm-hmm.
you get the guy blowing his head off.
Yeah.
And then you wait for the big fight at the end.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's nothing too exciting, at least in special effects terms.
Right.
Between
it's not
point...
flashy.
Right. It's...
The Fly 2 really, really tries. I mean, it's longer than the first movie is.
I would say that would qualify for a 90 for Chill website. I say that because once you establish your universe in 90 minutes, you've earned that extra half hour at the very least.
Right.
That's why you can make every John Wick movie longer than the next one. I want my 3-hour John Wick Chapter 4. You
right.
can do it. Keanu, I believe in you. And that's why we have a review for Kickboxer Retaliation, I think, was the most recent one. I'm still waiting on the Kickboxer Armageddon.
Right.
Get on that.
But with The Fly 2, it tries really hard, given that... Because pretty much most of the creative team from the first movie... The major creative players had gone with Cronenberg to do Dead Ringers.
Wow. That's definitely one I still need to get around to. I mean, that was the best, according to Screen Drops, correct?
Generally, it does duke it out with The Fly for title of Cronenberg's magnum opus.
It's just funny, because it looked like they weren't that confident in it after Drew McWeeny called it.
No, Dead Ringers is a beautiful movie,
okay.
and it is kind of the transitional film from Cronenberg, because after he went all the way with gore for The Fly, this kind of freedom up to not have to rely so heavily
on that. Right, no, you get your imagery and Naked Lunch.
I mean, there is definitely some twisted stuff going on. There is twisted stuff going on in Dead Ringers.
Oh, no. The sheer premise of Dead Ringers indicates there better be some twisted stuff.
Yeah, but, they make... The Fly and Dead Ringers are beautifully complementary films because they have a lot of conceptual similarities. They're both about a man who is altered by a romantic experience but doesn't know how to handle it and winds up becoming increasingly twisted by it. And they're both very reliant on the actor working with special effects.
Right,
different kinds.
Yes, most definitely. Not spoiler,
they don't
Jeremy Irons is twins. Okay.
And at the same time, though, The Fly is the warmest movie Cronenberg's ever done, probably, of his big movies.
Oh, no, you're...
And Dead Ringers is one of the icier ones.
Well,
though it isn't... That isn't to say it's an emotionally barren film. It is ultimately moving.
Well, you know, it kind of makes me think then the...
It's like a yin-yang relationship.
Well, I think then I would argue The Warmest is probably a history of violence in mind, because it's basically, yeah, we went through all this perfect family to hellish survival, and then it's like,
you're gonna have to pick up the pieces.
Right, we're gonna make it, but we are a family, regardless of.
Yeah.
I should be claiming the mafia throne in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Dead Ringers you can find on Tubi.
Okay.
Shout Factory has the rights, so they keep it around.
So, but long story short.
Too late.
We were on B-Fest, and so we got to Cronenberg, so we fit everything. So do you have anything more to go on about B-Fest then?
What other B-Fest stuff? Trying to think of the kind of films that would work well at B-Fest. Thanks to Tubi this past week, I saw The Wraith from 1986.
I love The Wraith. I have it on DVD.
That is an amazing little bee picture.
I know.
I'm kind of surprised it's not better known.
I keep arguing with myself, do I buy it? Because I bought it at Disc Replay. So
yeah.
It was a $5 one, so it's a rare DVD. But it doesn't have a subtitle. There's no subtitles.
Right.
So I can't just like, what am I missing in... would this be the Clint Howard performance?
It's definitely one of the highlights.
But
it goes back to that idea Jay Hoberman, that I think of Jay Hoberman's book on rape mirror movie making, like from the mid-70s through the 80s, Make My Day, where he just says that the RoboCop and The Fly are basically comic books writ large on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, he's right. And they do that better than the modern comic book movies do in directly translating that kind of energy and outrageousness. And The Wraith follows suit in its own way. It does play like a crazy comic book. And
yes.
It's this heightened sense of how it's just piling cool things on top of cool things.
Right. And I think biggest problem with comic book movies isn't the... is the fact that we have source material.
Yeah.
You can't go nuts with source material. You go nuts with source material, you get some classic comic book movies from the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't totally hate Judge Dredd. I have grown to love Tank Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And,
people are coming around on Tank Girl, I think.
But, as I say, you screw around source material too much. You're like, Marvel has done it right. They've pretty much made sure your characters are established. If you need an origin story, they'll give you an origin story. If you're cool, you eventually get WandaVision.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and I've been told I really need to start watching WandaVision. I mean, especially with what everybody's theorizing now. And I really kind of need this.
They think they're adapting the House of M story, the famous House of M story.
I heard that. Right. But the point of the matter is, I really needed that after Far From Home. I need my twisted... No, our innocence is lost. And just... I'm sorry. I'm scared now for Spider-Man 3. I mean, yeah, we're basically... looks like we're doing the greatest hits again. We loved Doc Ock, so we're getting the Doc Ock. We love J.K. Simmons, so we're getting him. Like, that end credit sequence was just so, like, no, unnecessary. Like,
there's also...
I don't know how we're going to do it. So, Doctor Strange, better kick some butt.
I'm just not as interested in the MCU stuff, and I was really impressed with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I still have to watch that. I have it.
It does so much that not only for the comic book movie, but I see where a lot of people wish we could get more animated features in general that can play around with the medium like that. They have a very interesting take on Doc Ock in there, too.
Well, I think, with that said, why... I mean, I guess it's really just a question of time, but even now with the computer-generated images being the norm for animation,
mm-hmm.
meaning we can really, once you got that wire model made, yeah. we should be making movies every year,
right.
which goes back to my Saw discussion with Joe about we need our annual schlock movies.
Well, that brings something to mind about B-Fest.
All right.
Is that they've never done animated features, as far as I can tell. I mean, sometimes they'll program, like, an odd animated short, like a Betty Boop piece.
Yeah.
But...
well, really, right now, it's the sheer lack of wild and crazy cartoons.
Right. And part of it is...
but are looking to have some sex. Sorry, wild and crazy. Like, I'm trying to... sorry. Again, golden age of Family Guy right now.
But
Cartoon Network.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is that and Drew McWeeny was just talking about this in his newsletter formerly, Dangerous, too. We still don't really have a true adult animation industry in this country, and if someone could tap into that, he suggested, it's not like Netflix couldn't look into it, they could open up a gigantic new market. You'd think there'd be real money in it.
I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen after Todd McFarlane's Spawn, and at that time, I think it was called Spicy City or Spice City?
Spicy City, that was the Ralph Bakshi production.
Right, but they happened pretty much coincided with us. One was like Cinemax, one was
right.
HBO. I liked Spicy City. Of course, I was 17 years old. I was looking for anything trashy.
Right.
And it's just great to know that us Americans can do something just as screwy as Takashi Miike. Yay!
And that brings me to thinking, though, that I think one thing that, because, as McWeeny said, American feature animation is still hidebound by the fact that it has to be for children.
Yes.
The only things that really come... like, even vaguely more adult, or the occasional independent production, like some of Richard Linklater's work.
Mm-hmm.
Or certain international productions, and I don't just mean out of Asia, because
right.
there are European filmmakers.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, Fantastic Planet is not a children's film.
Yeah. Have you seen Lelou's other films?
No.
He did do a few others. He didn't live very long, unfortunately. But he also did a film called Time Masters.
I've heard of it, yeah.
That is a beautiful film.
All right.
And also another good one is Light Years, which was released in 1988. And they did do a very good North American dub for it that had Bridget Fonda, that Penn Jillette,
Glenn
Close. And
so
that's a very good film.
All right. Wow.
I have to feel that some of Disney's 90s work took inspiration from his more fanciful settings,
right.
especially when they had the Breezy Brothers as part of their team for like the films around the time of Hunchback and Fantasia 2000.
Mm-hmm.
But
which is not talked about enough.
Fantasia 2000, I do feel, is an underrated film only because it had Firebird Suite.
Well, I mean, give me... sorry, Macho Man's theme with Donald Duck. Pomp and Circumstance?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
I thought that was kind
of... And James Earl Jones introducing a sketch with the flamingos and yo-yos.
Maybe the only people who really liked those interstitial bits with the celebrities.
I would have appreciated if they would have gone into the shadow element. Like, we all know what James Earl Jones sounds like. We all know what Steve Martin sounds like. Angela Lansbury, we could just presume she was the only old woman at the time. I'm surprised Betty White hasn't taken her soul yet. Betty White has cut a deal with the devil. She just took Cloris Leach and a co-star from Mary Tyler Moore. Maybe they never shared the screen together. The point of the matter is, if, as an atheist, Betty White might prove that there is a God because she's cut a deal with the devil. If there's a devil, there must be a God. There must be, per George Clooney in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Which brings us back, of course, to B-Fest and animation. The problem is, as McQueenie says, it is kind of limited to the family audience, and they've become really hidebound in terms of the structure of their stories and the kind of stories they're telling. Like, it's as... They did this oral history of the Emperor's New Groove for New York Magazine's Vulture website this week. And they talk about how in the mid-90s, they were starting to worry during the early production of the film, back when it was a more traditional musical called Kingdom of the Sun, that the movies, that the Disney anime features were getting too similar in terms of the character beats and the character types and the progression of the plot. And they mentioned there was like some chart that the head of animation of the company, Thomas Schumacher, saw that had made a very direct comparison between the film, the recent films, and was like Little Mermaid through Hercules. And I remember, I saw that, it was in Entertainment Weekly, it was either shortly after Hercules came out or just when it was coming out on video, so I think it was 98. And it had a point. You had your hero character, you had the love interest, you had the good sidekick, at least one, you had at least the bad guy. The bad guy had a sidekick, and the bad guy would die in a fall, and stuff like that. And it seems just as hidebound now, although it's not so much in the character types, and they're trying to tell different kinds of stories with each new film, but everybody... They've learned this postmodernism, as some would call it, after... From Tangled onward, where they're so meta and self-referential.
Well, I blame Shrek for that.
Yeah, that's the one everyone blames, and I understand. Although, there was a New York Times article, and I just linked to it for our friends, from 97 that said it was getting bad by the time they got starting roughly with Aladdin, and really was getting really bad by Hercules, and the movies stopped being about telling a story, more about being meta and postmodern and being shticky by Hercules. And they had a point then.
Yeah.
And now, it's the way everybody in the Marvel movies talks the same. Everybody in the Disney movies talks the
same. You
know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you don't want to deal with the... You don't want to mess with the... basically, until it goes wrong, and maybe you're not... changes the format.
And that's the problem. It hasn't really had a chance to go wrong anymore because of corporate consolidation that makes these kind of the only movies getting to a wide audience anymore.
Yeah, I can see that. But the audience is eating it up. So unless you come up with something new, like the idea that I was just brainstorming when you were saying, and your villain dies in the fall. So, Gaston survives the fall, and we go John Wick 3, and instead of the pit bull, that little guy... LeFou. Yeah. We'll just put him... We'll put a leash around his neck. Granted, John Wick is such a cool dog trainer.
And
his dogs never needed a leash. But basically, and I've just made it gay the right way. And I'm just saying, like, LeFou has it wasn't, like, from what I've heard of from the remake, it wasn't really that gay.
No, it wasn't.
So let's go, you know, I can fix this. go to maineventofthedead.com. Start sending your emails. RustedBus07@gmail.com. I can fix it. I am the Bob the Builder of cinema.
But that's another thing. As McWeeny and many others have pointed out, including my friend Jessica Ritchie, Disney is so willing to pat itself on the back for these tiny little crumbs they throw of diversity in their more recent films, but they're not willing to stick their neck out, though they are richer than Croesus at this point, just because they don't want to offend China and India.
Well, it's enough. You can say it's about not offending China and India.
That's part of it.
But I left Rise of Skywalker opening night, and, you know, I shed some tears once we had that space, everybody came together. It was such a beautiful moment. It covered up the stupidity that the previous 2 hours were. And I'll rewatch, like, I think I gave it three stars on my Letterboxd, and I gave it the thumbs up, meaning I'll rewatch it. Here's the thing, though. When I'm leaving, you had two guys behind me complaining about the lesbian kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a big deal. It was blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
People were watching it just to get upset with stuff, and it's
mm-hmm.
not the people who should be watching who have a reason to be upset with stuff.
Yeah.
And so Americans, Chinese, and Indian audiences, they aren't that different. And
right.
So
that is a point. That is a legitimate point too. But Disney should not have to worry about placating those people anyway. They can still make plenty of money from other markets that will be much more welcoming to more authentically feminine or queer.
You're gonna have to cut back in the money you spend on features like that.
Yes.
And I agree, it should be done. And, I mean, for the sake of art, don't throw $100 million at any movie. For the sake of art, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Endgame. I'm sorry. Well, no. There's no reason a Star Wars movie should ever cost more than $50 million.
I mean, I have a point. I don't know where the money goes.
Talk to David Goyer. He had a great podcast on Nerdist talking about how he pretty much still made the last profitable movie, which was Death Warrant.
Yeah.
Which did make 90forchill.com. You can read the review.
But just the other day, I saw the trailer that they've just dropped for Raya and the Last Dragon.
Yeah, I haven't taken the time to investigate that one.
Well, it's another of the Disney attempts to do... The comparison everybody makes is that this is Disney's version of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Okay,
Our beautiful, strong warrior teenage heroine has to unite the four kingdoms with the help of the last dragon. Who's
sounds more like Korra, or
it's a Southeast Asia inspired fantasy world, and part of the frustration is that it's not a lot of actual Southeast Asian performers being cast in it. It's more like Chinese, and that's a very sensitive issue.
Yeah, so,
like, Awkwafina is the voice of the dragon.
She's like the
wacky genie-like character.
I will never badmouth Mushu. So, you give me... Awkwafina can do no wrong. From what I've observed, I do have a movie with her and Mila Jovovich, which was certified fresh, so
mm-hmm. But
it's just a rarity to see a Mila Jovovich certified fresh. But regardless, so, I don't know, it sounded good to me, and never mind, I took 2 years of Mandarin, that's far easier to pronounce. I mean, I know it's not, this credits are typed to the screen, screen straight from the computer, it's not from a typewriter, so we're not going to lose a lot of money at ink putting Southeast Asian names in there. So, yeah, I get you
right
there.
But Awkwafina voices the dragon, and Raya is voiced by Kelly Marie Tran. And for some reason, she was not originally voiced by Tran. They, like a few months ago, they changed it out for reasons I don't know. Yeah.
Who was it originally?
I'd have to look it up.
Was it a name?
Not a name I recognized, but then I don't really know much.
Well, I mean, I might have a shot.
Okay, let me try and look it up.
Okay, so.
But there's also cute sidekicks like a toddler con artist. That's how the final trailer opens.
So it's gonna be
You're kidding me. And that's the tone of the dialogue throughout the trailers, that everybody's kind of snarky or they're trying to be cool.
You told me it's
Raya. That sort of sh.
Yeah. Well, you told me you told me toddler con artist. Immediately thinking, oh, this is Tiny Lister's swan song. Yay.
No, I'm sorry.
Zootopia fan though, regardless.
I never saw Zootopia. Oh. The plot didn't inspire me.
I think it ended up working out pretty well. Because
I do often look at the... I often let myself get spoiled with these films.
Yes.
I don't mind reading... Like, the little golden books, you know, they do such adorable little golden books these days. Mm. And I love looking at the illustrations. Sometimes wish the movie looked like that. I might go see it.
Okay, but... Tiny Lister, best known as Debo from the Friday series, of the freaking Earth,
and of course,
and Dracula 3000. I do recommend that film.
But no holds barred, which went over like gangbusters at B-Fest.
Well, right, we got back around
inspiring the legendary running gag. What would Zeus say from the whole rest of the show?
Yes, so...
But Raya was originally going to be voiced by Cassie Steele, who is a half-Filipina actress.
I think I've heard of her, yeah. So that's a bad move, and I hate to say that, because... I know her as Rose Kiko.
Yeah.
I know Kelly Marie Tran?
Yeah.
All right, so I know it better than most people. I went and did my best to... bitch about her not being in Rise of Skywalker immediately after Twitter.
Some people think that this is throwing her a bone after what happened.
You know, hey, if it works, and until it comes out, who's to say it's not?
Right.
So we've just broken down via B-Fest, via Cronenberg, via cartoons, what's wrong with Hollywood. So any other final thoughts on B-Fest? Because this, like, maybe I can get 20 minutes out of my older sister has turned into an hour. So
this is
good content. This is I'm not regretting this.
Thank you. Well, I had help with this iPad here, but I would like to get to B-Fest one of these days.
Well,
they have a lot of regulars. It sounds like it's a fun time.
Something you take David to?
I don't know if he'd have the stamina to go for something like that, and
David is her boyfriend.
Yeah, he does know a lot from, you know, the famous genre films. He knows his 80s stuff pretty well.
I'm not sure if
he has an appreciation for the ironic distance. You kind of need to appreciate a lot of B-Fest stuff.
Just
wanting to get into it.
No, he doesn't have an iPhone.
Actually, he just got a smartphone.
Oh, okay.
Texting with emojis today.
Oh,
it was fun.
Well, very cool. Think about FaceTime then in that event. I've been having good luck with Zoom, but, you know, I'm just saying. Not the talk relationship device advice. Get him to listen to the podcast. That's all I'm gonna go and really give you advice on. So, okay. I mean, it's the entire point of the podcast is not just that movies are too long today.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've actually kind of found a perfect balance, at least when it comes to, say, people like Blumhouse,
uh-huh.
who knows to just hit it, you know, low budget, knock it out.
Definitely one thing, which movies do well and which movies don't do well at B-Fest, is that they definitely don't want to go too long.
Yes.
Like, you're pushing it at, like, an hour 45.
Right, no, Life Force, unless you're really into Life Force, which I really am into, the video game, excellent translation of that film, in my opinion.
But yeah, if you go past 2 hours,
yes,
the movies that go past 2 hours do tend to get worse reactions. But like 1 hour 45 is kind of the upper limit.
If it's not right now,
films are much shorter.
Right now, I'm saying anything that's not a franchise is actually probably only getting 100 minutes at most now.
Yeah, when you think about
And if it's a franchise or the start of a franchise, yeah, they're going to go over the top with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about what kind of money is going to be made in the long. It's all a game about how much money can we make on this in the future versus guaranteed money now.
Right.
So I think Hollywood's kind of doing good now that, like, again, Blumhouse, yeah, they'll probably make sequels and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, Happy Death Day, The Purge. I hear The Purge universe is actually rather fascinating. I like the first Purge. But the point of the matter, I mean, the point of the podcast really is that, you know, there's just a lot of fun stuff out there.
Yeah.
It's not, well, you're looking at somebody who wants to become a producer. Mm-hmm. I do call myself a screenwriter. I have a script. I have multiple scripts, you know, drafts, all that bollocks. But people want to just have fun. And I think that's something I want to kind of use this podcast to preach. Let's just go and have fun with your movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then worry about the narrative afterwards.
Yeah.
Not the narrative. The narrative that the people with the money are trying to tell.
Right.
Buy GameStop with that said. So, again, just to wrap her up then, you can be found at Letterboxd.
Is the Poetic Critic.
That's the Poetic Critic.
Yeah.
Now, don't stimp on her singularity there. I'm CM Darth on Letterboxd, because, again, somebody's got to take those two letters away. Be it Cookie Master, Chick Master, Cookie Monster, Chick Master, Chicago Maid. You know, I do want to try to be the PM Punk, Peoria Maid. I know what I've mastered with that P. Let's just say, I mean, I know John Moxley's the Titty Master, as he put down on his, ring tape once. But you can find all my movie reviews and pretty much any kind of blog that I offer at maineventofthedead.com. Obviously, the 90forchill.com, the podcast is going to be found at 90forchill.com. So thanks very much, Rory, for this just this impromptu BS section. Your podcast gold, Rory. God bless the Aspergers, everyone. You know what you want to talk about. You're focused, and you know we can make as long as you got somebody with the patience, and somebody who knows that it's going to be unique. You are that snowflake.
Thank you.
All right. So I'll leave it to at this point, unless you have anything else left to say, Roar.
I think it's a little too long, but Possessor is really good. I think it's about to come drop.
Oh, Cronenberg's Kid?
Yeah.
Yes, it's actually at a reasonable price on iTunes usually. I'd say $10.
Just about to drop on Hulu too.
Right, so I'd say about $10 on iTunes. Looks really awesome. I have seen the trailers of that.
It is exceptionally good.
So otherwise, with talking about Possess, hey, somebody get Possession out there. Sam Neill, mother lovers. All right, so with that said then, thanks again, Rory, and we will leave it to David Tennant.
Thank you.
Can I hear a wahoo?
She's still alive.
What are you talking about?
Michael! Michael's brain is inside of the dinosaur.
I'm a dinosaur man, a prehistoric dude, king of the jungle, coming after you. I'm a T-Rex on the prowl, a reptile on the move. Better watch your step, I'm coming after you. Dinosaur music, it's
inside my brain. Sometimes I feel like I'm going insane. I feel the rumble. I feel the roar. Dance to the music of the dinosaur.
Stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Long live Flash! You've saved your ass. Have a nice day.